This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Their sound is distinct, their lyrics are unusual, and their range of topics is nothing short of bizarre. The band They Might Be Giants is loved for their clever and sophisticated songs about unusual subjects. Like Dr. Worm, a song about a worm who dreams of being a rock and roll drummer. Or this song, Au Contraire.
David Bowie came to town, flying overhead. Don't you dig my chops, he cried. This is what they said. Au contraire, Dave, quite the opposite, in fact. As it happens, au contraire, mon frère. Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew not what to do. This tie clashes with my hat, he cried. Don't you think that's true?
Au Contraire, from Indestructible Object, a new five-song EP by They Might Be Giants. The collection is a preview of their upcoming full-length CD called The Spine, coming out later this year. The band is made up of John Flansburgh and John Linnell, who have been making music together for about 20 years. Maybe it's surprising, and maybe it isn't, that They Might Be Giants has a lot of fans who are kids. Last year, the band released a new children's book and companion CD called Bed, 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 which was a follow-up to their recent children's CD, No. A profile in The New Yorker described They Might Be Giants as elders to a whole generation of smart, earnest nerd rockers. John Linnell plays keyboards and sings. John Flansburgh plays guitar and sings. Terry spoke with Linnell and Flansburgh last year. Here's the way they sound on one of their most recognizable songs, You're Not the Boss of Me, a defiant little jingle that sets the perfect frenetic tone for each week's episode of the Fox sitcom Malcolm in the Middle.
Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. Can you repeat the question? You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. And you're not so big. You're not the boss of me now.
I've always wondered about that song. How come it's You're Not the Boss of Me, and as opposed to the more grammatically correct, You Are Not My Boss?
Well, it was something that, it was a very popular expression in the household that I grew up in. And I think, grammar and syntax are not such a big deal with little kids.
Yeah, I think that's part of the appeal of the song, in a way, is that the grammar is so screwy. It gives it a special childlike emphasis.
Do you have kids of your own now, either of you?
I do, yeah. I've got a boy in kindergarten.
And my wife and I are raising two cats.
Uh-huh.
They're in kindergarten as well.
John Linnell, now that you have a child, are you more interested in writing songs for children?
Well, there's a sort of a more practical urgency to it. I realize that a lot of the material that John and I have done in the past, while we've always sort of felt like we were a band that kids could like, there are lyrics in our repertoire that I now see are pretty unsuitable for kids. So I like having the opportunity to do stuff that I can actually play for my son that doesn't scare him.
You've said that writing kids' songs has been artistically liberating, and I thought I'd play an example of a song I couldn't imagine you writing without the premise of, well, this is for kids, but it's a really terrific, it's a terrific song. It's called I Am Not Your Broom. And why don't we hear it, and then maybe you could talk about the writing of it. This is I Am Not Your Broom from the They Might Be Giants album, No.
Now, broom, you must now sweep for me. The dust, it fills my room.
No, John, I will not sweep for you, for I am not your broom.
What nonsense are you speaking, broom? My words you must obey.
Another life awaits me, and I'm leaving you today. I am not your broom. I am not your broom. I've had enough. I'm throwing off my chains of servitude. I am not your broom. I am not your broom. No longer must I sweep for you, for I am not your broom.
That's I Am Not Your Broom from the CD No by They Might Be Giants, and my guests are John Linnell and John Flansburgh, the founders of They Might Be Giants. Can you talk a little bit about writing I Am Not Your Broom?
Sure, yeah. Well, that was actually written before we started putting together a record for kids.
That's not proving my point.
I think it's an example of something that there are a few songs on No that we sort of reworked to make them more appropriate for kids. And that one, I guess, we just figured would be okay, and, though it includes words like servitude, which I guess you have to explain to kids what that's about. Even the concept of the wage slave broom or whatever the relationship is a little bit hard for kids to understand.
I suppose.
Well, getting back to Bosnia, I think it's sort of actually a universal theme among little brothers everywhere.
Right.
Servitude is something every family understands.
I love the song though because it works just on a, you know, on a literal, almost like housework level, but it's also could be like the angry lover or the angry worker.
And yeah, well, it was kind of meant to be completely literal. The song was written after I got a hold of one of these little inexpensive cameras in the shape of an eyeball that you can plug into your computer, and I realized like John and I could actually make our own videos, not for $500,000, but for, you know, the $99 it cost to buy this thing. So I started out, you know, looking around the room for something to use in the video, and all there really was my broom and my face. And so that pretty much was the entire basis for this song.
Right.
In addition to writing songs for children, you're still writing whatever songs you want to write. And you just have this knack for coming up with lyrics that say things that songs don't often say, or at least they don't often say it in the way you say it in your songs. I guess I'm thinking here as an example of your song Older. I mean, there's a lot of songs that are kind of bittersweet about getting on in years and stuff, but I can't think of one that's as kind of blunt as Older.
Yeah, I think that you know, some of my favorite stuff that we've done just kind of emerges. You know, I mean, it's not that we're not thinking about what we're doing, but I think often stuff just kind of pops out and then you make sense of it after the fact. And Older was that kind of song. It kind of felt like it wrote itself because it had this sort of weird unconscious quality.
John Linnell, were you thinking about getting older when you wrote the song, or did a clever rhyme just come to you?
I pretty much think about getting older all the time.
Do you?
In fact, I mean, the funny thing about our stuff generally is I think that John and I have a lot of anxieties and concerns that are sort of floating in the background that are just there in the songs because that's what's in our heads. You know, the music is often much happier, and I think that's one of the reasons why people think we're appropriate for their kids, even our adult material. But yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, death and things like that are pretty much constant topics for us.
Yes, with song titles like Hopeless Bleak Despair.
Hopeless Bleak Despair being an example, yeah.
But what I want to play is Older. So why don't we give that a listen? And this is from the They Might Be Giants album called Mink Car.
You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're even older, and now you're even older. You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're older still. Time is marching on, and time is still marching on. This day will
soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner. This day will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's sooner still.
Just for the edification of your listeners, that's a Rausch fife and a sarrusophone.
That's right.
Which you won't hear too often.
Are there any Rausch fife or sarrusophone enthusiasts out there?
They're real ancient. Well, one of them, I guess, would be called.
One of them's a 19th century instrument that's still hanging around. One of them really is like a, I guess, from the Renaissance.
Yeah, the sarrusophone is sort of an ancestor of the saxophone. And the engineer actually turned to us in the middle of the recording session and said, I know why this instrument didn't catch on. It doesn't work.
Maybe that's why there was something about the song that was reminding me of, like, an early chant.
Right, yeah, right.
Absolutely.
That's kind of what we're going for. I mean, it was definitely a conscious effort to, you know, create a sort of otherworldly, out of time,
something with spider webs on it.
Yeah,
right. So
get me some instrument that has some spider webs,
right,
please.
You still have Dial-A-Song, which is one of the early things that made the band unique. You had John. Why don't you describe it?
Well, it's basically just a phone number in Brooklyn that's connected to a phone machine, we have a, you know, it's a like a 80s style. A phone machine that breaks all the time because it can't really hold up to the weight of the calls. But you simply hear a song. And the idea of it kind of came out of, you know, we came up as a band in the mid-80s in sort of a weird downtown New York, Lower East Side, East Village art and performance context. And it seemed like an interesting way to find a different kind of audience for what we were doing. We were playing in a lot of clubs at 1 a.m, and it seemed sort of unreasonable to think that a curiosity seeker would stay up that late. So this was a way to kind of reach out to them. And phone machines were really a fad at that moment. I mean, it's hard to think of phone machines as being new, but they were a brand new idea. So we were kind of harnessing, you know, just the latest technology and using it to sort of show our songs, you know, get our songs to people without having any kind of, you know, other support.
And how has the use and the meaning of the Dial-A-Song changed over the years?
I don't think it particularly has. I mean, it's still the exact same setup. There's only one line. It's the place where all of our material kind of gets its beginning. All the demos of songs that will eventually wind up in the show or on records or will be, you know, are doomed to obscurity all make their way, you know, first through Dial-A-Song. And I think that the audience has not changed all that much. I mean, originally there was this originally I think it was a more local thing where there were sort of downtown New York people at work listening on their speakerphones. But I think there's still that element. There's people who call it up sort of as a way to break up their day, you know, just something to amuse them.
Yeah. Although I think the internet has kind of largely, you know, in some ways the way people use the internet for entertainment at work reminds me, it's as if it's the biggest Dial-A-Song service of all time. You know, it's just a great way to get away from your job.
One of the things I was thinking about Dial-A-Song is that it must be really liberating, you know, as a songwriter to have this venue where you could just like toss something off if you wanted to, put it on
there
and see how you like it.
It's super exciting. Yeah. Although there is this aspect to the phone machine that's really deadly, which is that when you put the cassette in the machine, like people start calling in, and if they don't like the song, they'll hang up in the middle. So you're immediately reminded of whatever, you know, you might be just really digging yourself and the song you just did, and then, you know, you pop it in, you think, they are gonna love this. And then, you know, it's like click, you know.
How do you know that they've hung up in the middle?
Oh, because you can hear the machine rewinding before it finishes the song.
Yeah, we run the risk of, if we take that kind of thing too seriously, of trying to make more and more spectacular sounding music that maybe would get away from what we were trying to do in the first place, you know. So become more like, you know, Fox News or something.
Right.
All the explosions right at the top.
That would be good. They might be giants. Dial song. 26 hours a day, 9 days a week.
Right. Oh, my God.
Unfiltered
my
music.
My arms and legs are on fire.
Unfiltered music. You can handle it. Yeah, so there's all sorts of things you can do.
Look with, forward to that.
with recordings. You know, I mean, I don't know. We try not to pay too much attention to the front row and too much attention to people hanging up in the middle. I think, you know, we recognize what we do is kind of fragile in a way, so.
Well, I thought this might be a good time to play what was, I think, like your first, you know, hit. This is Don't Let Start.
Mm-hmm.
John, can you talk about writing the song?
Well, this is one of those songs that is kind of in the clothing of a pop song. It's got this sort of rockin' arrangement. But the problem I've often had is I write songs starting with the music and the melody, and then I have this job of trying to fill in the words to a melody that's already written. So I end up having to sort of cram words in because the syllables fit. And that, I think, accounts for a lot of the lyrics in this one, which seem they're not exactly on point all the time. It's a song that has a, you know, sort of a strangely meandering lyric. And actually, it was for that reason, you know, when we put our first record out, I just felt like the lyrics were so oddball that we originally talked about putting it first on the record, and at the last minute I swapped it out for another one because I thought Don't Let Start was just too confusing. But you know, people still wound up liking it, I think, because the music was so, sort of, you know, appealing.
Well, why don't we hear Don't Let Start? Anything else you want to say about it?
No.
Okay. So this is from the first They Might Be Giants recording.
Don't let start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around. How you get around? When you are alone, you are the cat.
That's Don't Let Start from the first They Might Be Giants recording, and my guests are the founders of the band, John Linnell and John Flansburg.
I love being founders. It's a great feeling.
If like populations have become members of the band in subsequent years?
It sort of suggests, yeah. That
we're an institution.
That will carry on when we're gone as well, you know, that there will be statues of us.
In They Might Be Giants Hall.
Right.
Something to all look forward to.
No, it's a good way to describe it.
Since you didn't really set out to be performers, at least that's how it sounds hearing you talk, and it sounds like your goal in life wasn't to like be on stage. What was it like for you when you were on stage early on, and you had to find a way to be?
It was really mind-blowing. It was just a very different sort of responsibility and a different kind of response than we were anticipating. I mean, I remember our very first gig very vividly. We actually we had, you know, put the show together. We were working with a drum machine, so everything had to be kind of very tightly rehearsed with this. And our sort of gimmick as a band was that we had these very tricky arrangements that were very fast-paced, and the tape didn't stop, so it just was like this one long performance of very short songs. And so it was a real memory test.
There was a reason for that, too. We had this idea that if we stopped the tape or had blank spots in the tape, that people would realize that no one was clapping.
Right.
So we decided to do a show that had no breaks whatsoever.
It was a real defense mechanism. And we went up there and did the show, and immediately, you know, people started kind of like laughing in a very happy...
That's right.
You know, I mean, they weren't like laughing at us. They were sort of... I think they felt like they were laughing with us, but it was a very... it was just very unexpected for us. We really didn't think it was going to be that way.
Well, John Flansburgh, John Linnell, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
John Flansburgh and John Linnell, who are the band They Might Be Giants. They have a new 5-song collection called Indestructible Object. It's a preview of their new CD, which comes out later this year. They have a concert tonight in Anaheim and concerts this weekend in L.A. and Santa Barbara. They'll also be playing later this year in Baltimore, Ann Arbor, Columbus, and Brooklyn.